Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Emily Scarlett. The EPA releasing its finalized mercury and air toxic standards, which mandates limits on mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants. Those standards need to be reached by 2015. Some calling the rules unnecessary and burdensome regulations. To talk about how much air pollution is really being emitted by power plants, I'm joined by Joel Bloom. He's a professor of Earth and Environmental Sciences at the University of Michigan. He spent the last decade developing a technique that uses chemical fingerprints of the element mercury to directly link environmental mercury pollution to specific coal-burning power plants. Joel, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's nice to talk with you.
Now, you know, most people don't think about mercury pollution. They don't know anyone that's been poisoned by mercury. Why is this considered such a serious problem, yet the public seems to be kind of unaware of it?
Well, it's probably an educational problem there, in the sense that the word has not been spread widely enough. Mercury really is a very significant health problem, particularly for pregnant women and developing fetuses. Mercury that occurs in all types of fish is highly toxic, and in fish that are coming out of contaminated waterways as a food source can certainly lead to health problems.
Now, how far does mercury typically go from the power plant? How many miles away?
Well, that's a key question. So the interesting thing about mercury is that when it's emitted, a portion of that mercury is deposited locally, tens of miles from the power plant, whereas another portion of the mercury that's emitted can stay in the atmosphere for up to a year and can actually be transported around the globe and deposited other places. So one of the things that I've done research on and others have been researching is this question of how much of the mercury is actually deposited locally. And as it turns out, that we've been able to show through a number of different methods that a very significant portion is deposited locally, and this forms what we call mercury hotspots, or areas where rivers and lakes have elevated levels of mercury and the fish coming out of them have elevated mercury. And so in terms of the question of if people have a power plant upwind from them, they're certainly going to be exposed to higher levels of mercury than if they don't.
So if you're being exposed to mercury, it's not through the air, it's through eating fish directly, which means that if you don't eat local fish, you're not going to be exposed, though. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah. So the by far the most important pathway is through fish consumption. So people who are eating fish that they buy at the grocery store are also exposed to mercury, and it depends very much on what type of fish it is. Some fish have quite low levels of mercury. Other types of fish have much higher levels of mercury. And so many of the public health recommendations have not been to stop eating fish, but to go to the FDA website and look at which species of fish have high levels and which have low levels, and to restrict your diet in terms of the high level fish. But in terms of the local regulations of power plants, if you don't eat sport fish or fish from the Great Lakes, you're correct. The exposure to mercury is not a big health problem.
I'm talking to Joel Bloom. He's a professor of Earth and Environmental Sciences at the University of Michigan. You know, some critics, from what I've found, have said that the real target is CO2, and the emission of mercury is almost negligible in their eyes. What do you think about that argument?
I don't think that argument is based on good science. The argument has been made that Chinese and Indian power plants are releasing more mercury to the atmosphere than our power plants are, and therefore ours are a small portion globally, and it's not worth the expense to regulate. I think that's it's based on faulty science, because these people are not recognizing that mercury is, in fact, a significant portion of mercury is deposited directly downwind from power plants. And so, therefore, the mercury that we're releasing from our own power plants is having a much stronger effect on our population than mercury emitted other places in the world.
Mercury control regulations are already enforced by 17 states, requiring 80 to 95% mercury capture rates. So how much mercury is typically captured by plants that are not under such strict rules?
It's highly variable depending on the types of coals that are being burned and the types of emissions controls that are on the plant. So it's really impossible to give a number, but in some of the very old plants, the majority of the mercury in coal is being released, the vast majority. And with modern emissions control devices that are put onto most new plants and also plants in many states that have regulated against mercury emissions, the mercury emissions have been reduced by about 90%.
Why are these regulations necessary? I mean, don't plants typically improve the technology as best they can without obviously costing too much, which could very well end up costing the consumers?
No. Typically, the plants will upgrade their pollution control to meet regulations that are set by the EPA and by states. The reality is that if they don't have to improve the emissions controls, that they won't for economic reasons. It's in terms of profitability. Those states, there are many power plants that have gone ahead and upgraded their emissions controls in anticipation of federal regulations, because this bill, this EPA regulation has been discussed, and it's been 10, 20 years in the making. So some have said we're going to anticipate it, and so we're going to deal with it. Others have been more stubborn and said we're not going to change our emissions controls until we have to.
Well, in fact, some critics say it takes 3 to 6 years to even begin to plan to meet these kinds of guidelines and rules, I should say. Is there enough time, and how extensive is the changes that a power plant needs to make to reach these kinds of numbers?
Well, my expertise is in the science and, the chemical behavior and the biological behavior of mercury in the environment. And my knowledge of the economics is only what I read in the newspaper. But my understanding is that the EPA feels that it's realistic that they're giving 4 years for compliance, and that, based on examples from other parts of the country, that is a reasonable amount of time to come into compliance. But I don't, I'm not an expert in that area. In terms of the expenses, I've seen numbers, a number that I've seen quoted is $9 billion nationally to upgrade plants. And the EPA has estimated savings in reduced health problems due to these improvements in air quality, and have argued that there's a many fold savings over the cost that would be incurred if people continue to have health problems related to air quality.
Well, give me a sense of the effect on people. I mean, I'm guessing these are minute amount of mercury that they get into people's system through eating a fish occasionally, but how damaging is it, and how necessary is it really to pursue this regulation now?
Well, there are very direct health effects, and there have been many studies that have looked at populations exposed to different amounts of mercury, and looked at IQ and other neurological tests, and found very direct relationships. And so when studies that have been done of the amount of mercury that Americans are exposed to have suggested that there's a very significant part of the population, particularly of women of childbearing age, who are exposed to levels that, according to the epidemiological studies, could have significant effects on neurological development in young children. So, I'm not a health expert. My expertise is in the environmental science of mercury, but there are many studies that have been done that have shown that Americans, particularly those who eat a lot of seafood, are exposed to high enough levels to cause health problems.
Any sense of how quickly and how dramatically we'll see mercury levels in the environment drop once this kind of a regulation takes full effect?
There's previously been legislation that has reduced the mercury emissions from incinerators and medical waste and trash incinerators. And following the installation of emissions control devices on those types of facilities, which was mandated many years ago by the EPA, there were, people have observed decreases in mercury in waterways and in fish. And so we have every reason to believe that there will be decreases when the emission controls are put onto the coal-fired power plants. The exact amount of time that it will take is going to be very much dependent on the particular waterway, and it's something that's very difficult to predict. It's something we'll be studying and monitoring closely to look at the effects. But we're pretty confident that within a few years after the reduction in the emissions, that we'll see reductions in values in fish.
I guess the good news is that mercury is not accumulating in cattle, or we'd all be in some big trouble here in the U.S.
That's right. Yeah, the cattle, the seafood consumption of cattle is not large. So yeah,
and I think the consumption of seafood by Americans isn't too extreme either, generally.
Well, it's not extreme, but it's high enough that the health risks are very real. And and Americans get a very large amount of their fish from tuna, canned tuna, which can have elevated levels, as well as sushi and other forms of seafood. And there are many, many examples out there of people who have gotten high enough levels that it's really had severe health effects on them. But it's usually in the extreme of people who eat unusually large quantities of seafood, in particular the types of fish that have the highest levels. It's only the fish that, large fish that are, we call high trophic levels, that eat other fish. So fish that eat other fish are the ones that typically have the high levels.
Joel Bloom, Professor of Earth and Environmental Sciences at the University of Michigan. Joel, thank you very much for joining me.
It's been a pleasure. I appreciate being able to talk with you about this.
Interesting stuff. We will be right back. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.